We're talking about the never-ending pursuit to slow the aging process and why that may be futile. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We're exploring a case for why human longevity has reached its upper limits and that future generations won't live decades longer than we do now. And we've heard exercise more, sleep more, stress less, eat our veggies. There are all the drugs and nutritional supplements trying to boost longevity. Are they selling us a bunch of hooey? What is your secret to longevity? What do you do every day to live longer? We're at 800-642-1234. Jay Olshansky is a professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's on the board for the American Federation for Aging Research. Jay, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
So the oldest person to live was 122. She died in 1997. As you look at the medical research and the breakthroughs on the horizon, are we destined to break that record of 122 in the coming decades?
Well, so keep in mind, that's the world record. So we're talking about one person. No one's even come close since 1997, but that tail end of the survival distribution could be influenced by the size of the population. So it's possible. 122 could be broken. In theory, it's possible somebody could be alive today that's over 122 that we just don't know about, because sometimes this occurs in places where they don't keep very good birth records or medical records. But, you know, seriously, do we really?
And I think we're losing
whether
you.
Whether or not the world record is broken.
Yeah, we're losing you, Jay, here on our Skype connection, and so we're going to be reconnecting with you momentarily here by landline or by phone, cell phone. We're talking about this never-ending pursuit to slow the aging process and what longevity means. You can join in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. What do you do to slow your aging process? Have you committed to a specific regimen, such as exercise or eating certain foods? Do you perhaps take supplements or some type of specific medications that you think will help you live longer and stronger? What do you think about lifespan? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jay, I think we have you on phone now. Are you okay? Are you there?
Yeah, glad to be back.
Let me
finish the thought on Jean Calment. So I guess the real question is, do we really care about the world record for human longevity? Because the chances are the rest of us can't really live that long. So I think the record may be broken. It's entirely possible, and it could be possible that somebody's alive today over 122, but it's like, you know, it's like the world record for running the mile. The current record is 3:43. Do any of us really care that it goes down to 3:42? No, the rest of us can't really run that fast, so I'm not sure the record matters. It's more that the average is important.
Yeah, and so the average, you know, the groups who are in the middle of the pack, do you, you're a skeptic of the lifespan enhancement industry, and you've argued that human longevity has pretty much reached its upper limits. Why don't you see further gains?
So this may sound unusual to some folks, but I'll explain why. What I would argue cautiously is that as long as we live now is about as long as we're going to live. Now, the rise in longevity that occurred in the last century, it was about 30 years. It was very dramatic. Most of it was due to reductions in infant and child mortality. We've brought down death rates at middle and older ages due to medical technology, no doubt. And I actually think that we could live a little bit longer than we do now, maybe. I think we can push the limit out to about 85 for men and women combined. That's about 88 for women, 82 for men, and that's about it based on current technology. And it's influenced by our body design, which is genetically fixed. It's something that we inherit. We can certainly fiddle with that a bit by replacing body parts, but there's a limit to how much we can do that. And the one body part we cannot replace at the moment is the brain. And that's probably our Achilles heel. So I think that there are limits to how long we can live, just as there are limits to how fast we can run and how far we can throw a javelin and how fast we can swim and skate. There are limits to all of these things, and human longevity is one of them.
Talking with Jay Olshansky, he's a professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and he studies aging. Jay, how do we age? How does aging work? What happens to our bodies as we get older?
Well, probably the best way to think of it is accumulated damage that occurs as a result of being alive. So, you know, as we're processing food, as we breathe, that entire process leads to cellular damage. Most of the damage that occurs to our cells, to our DNA, is repaired. We have these incredibly efficient repair mechanisms, but they're not perfect. And the absence of perfection means that this damage accumulates across time. We have, damage to our DNA, damage to the cell structure itself. And as this damage accumulates, it causes essentially damaged tissues and organs and organ systems until something eventually fails or falls apart. It's not really that far different from your car.
It's like wear and tear on your car.
Exactly. And keep in mind that when you drive your car, and I'm going to use this metaphor of driving your body, you choose how you drive that car and you choose how you drive this body. And if you make bad decisions like smoking or becoming obese or excessive exposure to alcohol or drugs, then you're driving, you've got your foot on the accelerator, and don't be surprised if you crash and burn under those conditions. And the same thing happens to your car. You can do an oil lube and a filter on your car on a regular basis, and you'll notice that it drives better. It's the same with your body. If you exercise and eat right, basically you're going to allow this body to live out to its genetic potential. And then there's a strong random component to aging over which we have no control at all. So there are things that we can do today to enhance our quality of life and to some extent our length of life, but I would remind everyone that the focus of research on aging and medicine is not life extension, it is health extension. We are trying to make people healthier longer, not necessarily live longer.
So what's the random component? What can't we control?
Well, so there's random damage that occurs to cells and tissues and organs and organ systems that is just the result of the byproduct of genetic damage. Just think of a bull in a china shop. You know, the bull doesn't know what direction it's going. There's maybe valuable pieces of china on the left side and not valuable ones on the right side. You don't know which way the bull's going to go. It's the same way with the human body. This damage that's occurring sometimes occurs to key systems and sometimes it doesn't. So you can get some people that live very healthy lifestyles that die in their 30s and 40s, and you can get people that have some unhealthy habits, like Jean Calment, the 122-year-old woman, by the way, smoked for 100 years. So clearly for her, smoking was not a risk factor, and the same applies to the rest of us. Some of us may have healthy lifestyles and face an early death, but most of us that acquire healthy lifestyles will indeed be extending our health and quality of life.
We're talking about what it takes to live longer and what scientists understand about aging, and still, what's a mystery? University of Illinois at Chicago Public Health Professor Jay Olshansky is our guide. What habits have you tried to break to live longer? Do you already notice a difference in how you feel? Have you started exercising or changing your diet? What habits do you wish you'd formed sooner? Join in on Longevity, 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more on living longer and what's possible, what's not, with Jay Olshansky here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about living longer and what's possible in humans. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Researchers say centenarians seem to have a good mix of genes and good luck. They didn't get cancer. They didn't have a heart attack or die in a car accident. And then there's the brain science. Researchers at Harvard are out with a new paper explaining what they think is a gene expression of human longevity in our brain. So how do we filter all these theories on longevity and the hard science to figure out what can help us live longer and healthier? Are you trying new things? Are you taking supplements? Your questions, your experiences, 800-642-1234. University of Illinois at Chicago public health professor Jay Olshansky stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Thomas is joining us from Wauwatosa this morning. Hi, Thomas.
Good morning. So I don't want to be technically nitpicking, but I think the oldest person actually was Methuselah at 969 years. according to the Torah, the Bible, and the Quran, it seems to be pretty well agreed upon. That aside, I would say that quality of life is probably, to me, it's more important than the quantity of life. My mom suffered at the end of her life. It was rough to see her go. And so it was really deteriorated towards her old age. As for myself, I try to just approach life, take things in moderation. I try to just keep a positive, healthy mindset, be happy, you know, just kind of enjoy life as it comes. Because if your mind's not right, as Abraham Lincoln said, a house divided against itself cannot stand.
Well, Thomas, thanks so much for that. And Jay, it sounds like really Thomas is getting at that improving quality of life can really make a difference regardless of how long you live.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key message. I mean, you have to realize that we've pushed out the envelope of survival so dramatically that we see these things go wrong with our bodies that we wouldn't ordinarily see. It's sort of the same thing with your cars. Remember, if you turn those cars in every 3 years, you're not going to see things go wrong. You run them for 200,000 miles, things start to fall apart. It's the same thing with our bodies. We weren't really designed to last this long, and so we are essentially living beyond our biological warranty period. And so we shouldn't be surprised when these kinds of things go wrong with us. So Thomas is right. The focus should not be on length of life. It should be on quality. And any sort of intervention that comes along that does not influence quality of life but only influences length of life may, in fact, be harmful. And I would emphasize, by the way, and you probably didn't get this at the beginning, is that I'm extraordinarily optimistic that aging science is on the verge of a breakthrough that has the potential to yield these significant improvements in quality of life and delays in the rate of biological aging. So there's a lot going on. Unfortunately, there isn't anything that's out there today that will allow us to slow, stop, or reverse the aging process, but I think we're close.
Is it breakthroughs in, like, disease, like curing cancer or heart disease? What are the breakthroughs?
So a breakthrough, believe it or not, a cure for cancer, a cure for heart disease would not be a breakthrough in aging science. If you reduce, death is a zero-sum game, so if you reduce the risk of death from one disease, something else eventually goes up. What's going on in aging science today is that we're seeking interventions that are systemic, meaning a single intervention will lower the risk of everything all at once. I mean, imagine taking a pill that could slow your biological process of aging so that 1 year from now, you're not 1 year older biologically, you're less than 1 year older biologically. And it basically means you could retain your youthful vigor for a longer time period and compress any frailty and disability that it does appear at older ages into a shorter duration of time at the end of life. And I think we're on the verge of a breakthrough that's going to happen in our lifetime.
So with the 2020 elections around the corner, there's been this renewed attention on the age of presidents, and you've done some research on this. President Trump and several Democratic candidates are in their 70s. Do you think it's fair for people to be talking about age?
Well, I always think it's fair to talk about age. I just don't think age should be used as a litmus test for becoming president of the United States. It's, you know, those of us that study aging for a living have identified a subgroup of the population called superagers. These are people that make it out into their 70s, 80s, 90s, and older that are really functioning at the level of a, you know, 40 or 50-year-old. Which is generally at an exceptionally high level. And from my study of all presidents in the United States that have ever lived, You know, there's reason to believe that many of them fall into the category of these superagers. You know, the average duration of life for presidents tends to be longer, significantly longer, than the general population. You know, all of the candidates that are running now exhibit many of the signs of superagers. We'd have to do a genetic test to know for sure, and some other tests on their cognitive functioning to know for sure whether or not they fall into that category. But, you know,
but when you see pictures of presidents from the beginning of their term and then at the end of their term, there is visible signs of aging. They're grayer. They look more tired.
Well, two things there. First of all, if you take a picture of any, let's just say somebody is elected at age 60, and you take their picture, and then you take their picture at 68, 8 years later, they're going to look older. And that applies to all of us, you and I included. So first of all, there are natural age-related changes that occur to hair and skin, and especially people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. 8 years is basically the, 8 years, ironically enough, is the doubling time for most of the things that go wrong with us in terms of risk. Now, is it possible that some of them may experience accelerated graying of the hair and wrinkling of the skin? Sure. I think we saw that in President Obama. We don't know if it would have occurred to that extent anyway, but the good news for us is we don't die from gray hair and wrinkled skin.
We're talking with Jay Olshansky. He's professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and he looks at human longevity and the health and policy implications tied to aging. You can join in. How much do you think your genetics will determine how long you live? What do you see in your own family history? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jay, in more recent years, we've seen life expectancy here in the U.S. and around the world stagnate a bit and even decline. Has that development been a surprise to health researchers?
Well, to some it has. To myself and my colleagues, it has not. I mean, way back in 1990, in a lead article in Science, my colleagues and I, ironically enough, published a paper called In Search of Methuselah. Thomas's mention
Thanks,
of
Thomas.
Methuselah was right. In Search of Methuselah, Estimating the Upper Limits to Human Longevity. And it was at that point where we said, look, the rise in life expectancy is going to slow down. It's going to decelerate. And in some countries, it may actually reverse. In 2005, we published an article in the New England Journal of Medicine saying, hey, folks, this is it. Life expectancy is on the verge of a decline. A lot of people didn't believe us. That's exactly what happened. It's sort of like suggesting that there's a limit, like I said earlier, to how fast we can run. And once you get up to, 3 minutes, 43 seconds for the 1 mile run, you can pretty well predict it's not going to change much after that. And if it does, it's only going to be in small increments. And it's the same thing with human longevity. It doesn't mean we can't make progress. We can. It doesn't mean we can't reduce the risk of diseases. We can. It's just that it's not going to have much of an impact on this metric of life expectancy anymore. So I'm sorry to say that you're not going to see much of a change in life expectancy going up. It will be small and incremental, but there are still gains to be made.
Mortality has an impact there as well, that more babies are living.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, infant mortality rates now in developed nations are so low that it can't really go down much further. So we've reached a point where any significant, I mean, we've squeezed out as much longevity as we can from saving children. So now the only thing that stands in front of us is aging itself. That's the barrier. And that's the reason why the rise in life expectancy has decelerated. And in some places like the United States, it's actually begun to decline. And that has to do in part with the rising levels of obesity, diabetes associated with it. Then you have accidents, homicide, suicide influencing what's going on. You have drug use influencing things as well. So anytime you have an increase in middle age mortality, you're going to get this dip in life expectancy, and that's exactly what's happening in the United States.
So as we wrap up here, what could we start doing right now to improve quality of life and perhaps tip the needle on our own longevity?
Rule number one, choose long-lived, healthy parents. If you're able to do that, you've achieved probably the number one thing you can do. Next in line would be diet and exercise. Exercise has an extraordinarily powerful effect on people of every age, even centenarians, even people that are 100 that begin exercising experience the benefits immediately. So no question, diet and exercise are the low-hanging fruit. And then keep a close eye on aging science and aging biology, because you are going to see a breakthrough happen sometime. I'm not going to give you a number.
Oh, come on.
Sorry.
All right. Well, you know, fortunately for you, time is up, Jay. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Jay Olshansky is a professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and he studies the upper limits of aging. Coming up, we look at a new fence being tested out in Kentucky to help stop the spread of invasive Asian carp. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network.